As usual, the older woman had composed her expression to one of courteous welcome, and it was impossible to tell if there was genuine feeling behind it.
"Hello, Meredith,"
Annabel said, but Meredith was looking at Grace.
"I didn't know you were coming, Grace."
Grace was caught off guard. Was she not welcome now?
"I wanted a word with you."
The older woman's eyebrows rose a fraction.
"Come through to the living room, then," she said.
Grace unbuckled Millie from her stroller and followed Annabel through the house. They entered a cozy living room where a fire was blazing. Pippa sat by the hearth and began to get up as they approached, until Meredith commanded,
"Stay."
The dog lay back down again and put her head on her paws. Meredith made a formidable matriarch, Grace thought. Not someone to get on the wrong side of. She hadn't seen any photos of Ben around the place and wondered how his mother felt about his return to the village. Meredith invited them to sit on a sofa and perched on a chair facing them. Grace had brought a few small board books to keep Millie entertained, and now she sat her daughter on her lap and handed her the pile.
"Right," Meredith said. "I'm happy to answer questions, Annabel, but I don't want my photograph taken."
"All right, then,"
Annabel agreed, fishing a notepad and pen from her bag.
"I'll find something else."
She looked beyond Meredith for a moment.
"That's a really unusual fireplace."
Grace looked at the tall post which was standing beside the fireplace, strange markings carved into the top.
"That's a witching post,"
Meredith said, without turning around. She looked at the sisters, registering their apprehensive glances.
"My grandfather knocked down some crumbling old cottages that had been here for centuries when he built this house. The witching post was found in one, and he set it into the fireplace. He was too superstitious not to."
"And what is a witching post?"
Annabel asked, staring spellbound at the hearth.
"There are various legends, often to do with them offering protection from witches," Meredith told them. "Although I've also heard they marked safe places to hold Catholic Mass back in the 1600s when you could be killed for it. But you're here to ask me about Timmy."
"Yes,"
Annabel shifted in her seat.
"So you say you have the ghost of a young child living with you?"
"We do have Timmy's ghost living with us,"
Meredith replied sternly.
"Have you ever seen him?"
"No, but as I told you before, two of my girls have, and I'm sure they'll tell you about it if you ask them. I've only heard the banging of doors and a child's laughter, which are the more obvious indications of his presence. But there are subtle things too, usually items being moved around in certain rooms. And he also has a fondness for playing with the time on our mantelpiece clock."
Grace started upon hearing this and caught Meredith's eye briefly before Annabel diverted their attention, asking,
"When was the first time you became aware of his presence?"
"There have been stories in my family for years," Meredith told them, "but I never experienced him as a young child. He became more active in the 70s. My father always said it was because..."
Meredith stopped.
"Because?"
Annabel encouraged.
"Because I had young children in the house,"
Meredith finished, looking briefly at her hands as she spoke, then back at Annabel.
"Perhaps my brood reminded him of when the place was a school, and he hoped to join in with their games."
Grace looked down at Millie, who was still busy with her books. She was glad Millie wouldn't understand the topic of conversation.
"And when was the last time anyone saw him?"
Annabel asked.
"It was when Jenny was a child. She was playing in her room and saw a young boy standing in the doorway, watching her. But she wasn't frightened."
"No one's seen him since?"
"No, Annabel, I'm afraid not."
"So can you describe what it's like, living with a ghost?"
Meredith gave a weary sigh.
It's like living without a ghost, except for a few unexpected bumps and bangs now and again, and having to hunt for your pens or papers, because the little scamp has moved them.
It doesn't scare you?
Meredith gave a tight smile.
No, it doesn't. It's probably the least of my worries, in fact. Sorry.
Annabelle sighed.
Well, if there's anything else you think of that might be interesting, now or later, could you let me know?
Yes, of course.
And would you mind if I call again if I have any more questions?
That's fine.
Meredith got to her feet.
Now, I'd better check how the cooking is going. Would you like a word with Veronica while she's here?
Yes, please.
Annabelle perked up. But before Meredith could leave, Grace set Millie on the floor and stood up.
Actually, Meredith, I have something to ask you as well, on a different subject.
Meredith stopped in her tracks and turned slowly back around.
I'm trying to trace Johnny Templeton, Grace explained. Can you tell me where he lived before he moved to Australia?
Of course,
Meredith said, and Grace thought she heard a trace of disdain in her voice.
Gildale, a little village near Ogden. His family had a farm there, called Riverview. His sister didn't go to Australia with the family. She got married to an Ogden man and moved into town. I think she still lives there. She might be able to help you.
Great. Do you know her name?
Josephine, Meredith replied. I'll let you know if I think of anything else, shall I?
Grace nodded. Thank you for your help.
I'll ask Veronica to come in now,
Meredith said over her shoulder as she left the room. While they waited, it was clear to Grace that her sister had been riled by Meredith's offhand manner. Annabelle looked like she were about to start talking, but Grace muttered, "Not now." A few moments later, a face poked hesitantly around the door.
"Mum said you wanted to see me."
"Yes," Annabelle indicated the sofa opposite her with a wave of her pad. "I'd love to ask you a few questions. About Timmy?" Veronica regarded them worriedly.
"The ghost?"
Annabelle prompted. Veronica closed the door gently behind her and sat down.
"Look, Annabelle, this is a bit embarrassing. What's Mum told you?"
"That you and Jenny saw Timmy as children."
Veronica seemed sheepish.
"Okay, please don't tell Mum this, but we made it up. We were attention-seeking. If we'd known Mum would tell these stories until the end of time, we might have thought twice. I'm not saying he doesn't exist, but I don't think either of us wants to start talking about him with a journalist. Can you drop it? I'm really sorry."
Annabelle sat back and closed her eyes for a moment.
"Don't worry, I'll work something else out."
Grace could see that her sister was inwardly seething. She sat there embarrassed as Veronica asked,
"Would you like to stay for another drink?"
Before Annabelle could say anything, Grace answered, "No, it's fine. We need to get back for lunch. Thanks anyway." Veronica showed them out. They set off in silence, but as soon as they were away from the house, Annabelle blurted,
"Well, that's my story down the toilet."
"Come on, Belle. There are loads of ghost stories around here. You'll just have to think of a new angle."
"That's not the point,"
Annabelle grumbled, and they lapsed back into silence. A few minutes later, Grace saw Jenny and Claire crossing the bridge and heading up the hill towards them. She wondered if they had been to see their brother and was about to give them a wave when Claire looked up and saw them, then threaded her arm through Jenny's. There was something out of place about the gesture, Grace thought. something that made her keep her arm by her side as they got closer. When they passed one another, Claire gave a cheerful hello, but both women kept up their stride.
That was a bit odd, Grace said as soon as they were out of earshot.
What?
Annabelle asked distractedly.
Oh, it was fine, Grace. Stop being so suspicious of everything. Come on, let's hurry up and get back. I need to see what I can do to rescue this piece. I wish I hadn't told the features editor about it now. I'm going to look like a total idiot.
They carried on, occasionally having to clutch at one another to steady themselves when they hit a patch of slick ice. When they reached the bridge at the dip of the road, Grace took the opportunity to glance back up the hill. Jenny was looking around too. A second later, Claire followed her sister's gaze, said something, and Jenny turned away. Chapter 28.
I'm going to take a drive, Annabelle announced the next day.
A snowplow had been through, and the roads were clear, the remaining snow piled in dirty grey-brown heaps on the sides.
Do you remember me telling you about the pub Ben took me to, the one with the ghost chair? I'm going to have a word with the landlord and see where I go from there.
Ben might have more ideas too, Grace said. Or what about Feathery Jack? He looks like a man who'd have plenty of stories to tell. You could even feed his birds a mouse or two while you're with him.
Annabelle gave her sister a sarcastic grin. No, thank you. Perhaps I'll flick through Collie's book, though. See if I can come up with anything that way.
When Annabelle had left, Grace decided to go and see Ben to discuss restarting work on the cottage. She carried Millie up the lane, her arms aching, hoping it wouldn't be long before her daughter began to walk.
Grace.
Ben appeared pleased to see her as he opened the door, which brightened her mood. He invited her in. Though she noticed he shut the door to the living room before she walked past, and ushered her into the kitchen. Was that deliberate? She wondered. Or am I becoming completely paranoid about everyone here?
As you know, James is gone now, she told him, so we could do a bit more work downstairs. I'd like to get on with it.
Sure,
he agreed.
Why don't I take a look at some of the smaller jobs while Annabelle is still with you? Have you decided what kind of cabinets you'll get for the kitchen? Or sorted out the flooring?
I haven't even thought about it, Grace admitted. But I'll make a start today. I'll take Millie into town.
It's a good time to shop with the sales on,
Ben agreed.
I'll come around tomorrow morning and we'll go from there.
When he showed her out, Grace glanced again at the closed living room door. She was sure they were becoming friends. And yet she was convinced he was withholding things, despite all he had told her. She tried to push away her doubts as she walked back down the lane. Adam's disappearance had made her too distrustful. She had to stop approaching everyone as though something mysterious or sinister might be going on beneath the surface. She couldn't live the rest of her life with a prevailing sense of suspicion. Grace was determined to make it into town. She knew she'd feel better when she was progressing again with work on the cottage. She packed a lunch for Millie, then headed for the car. She hadn't used it since before Christmas, and was thankful that the engine started right up. She switched the heating on full blast while she was strapping Millie in, then traipsed around the outside of the vehicle, clearing the windows of the remaining snow and ice. Once they set off, Millie began to fret before they'd even gotten up the hill. And Grace fervently hoped she wouldn't keep it up for the whole journey. The car only warmed up properly as they reached the top of the moors. Grace was beginning to settle into the drive, when her eye caught some marks on the windshield. She looked closer. There were greasy letters smeared on the glass, only just visible. As she tried to make out what they said, she lost concentration and had to swerve to avoid running off the road. She slowed to a crawl, and then pulled over, still scanning the windshield. Whatever it was, it had been written on the outside.
She got out and went around to the front of the car, standing back so she could see. Running the length and width of her windscreen were five large letters, very faint, but there nonetheless, spelling out one word: leave. Fear and bewilderment made her insensible for a moment, and she cast around wildly, as though someone might be standing nearby. All she saw was flat, desolate moorland. She collected a rag from the car and scrubbed furiously at the letters until she couldn't see them any longer. Back inside, she switched on the windshield wipers, briefly mesmerized by the tick-tock of their rhythmic swaying. She had a flash of longing for another life. She wanted to feel carefree and safe. She wanted to sit in a cafe for a long, lazy afternoon, drinking hot chocolate and reading her book without interruption. She wanted to take a holiday and lie in sweltering golden sunshine or swim in a refreshing sea. She wanted her mind to stop worrying. She wanted to feel like herself again and not this frightened stranger. Millie's restless cries reached into her daydreams and drew her back to the present. In the cold white light, her hands looked grey-blue, curved rigid around the steering wheel. She hunted in her bag and handed Millie a biscuit, then sat for a moment in indecision. She wasn't sure she wanted to drive while she felt so frightened, but as she looked behind her, towards the village, she knew she didn't want to go back there either. She put the car into gear and set off again, trying to figure out who might have done such a petty, cruel thing. Her mind went first of all to James. Had he been so vindictive as to write that on her windshield as he left? Why would he have gone to the trouble? Unless he'd been trying to scare her into leaving. It was a pretty outrageous thing to do, but then she'd never seen him so angry. Or was it Annabelle, playing a joke? Or perhaps both of them in it together, thinking that if they couldn't reason her away from the village, they could spook her out. Then she pictured Meredith and her cool, indifferent manner. Her children were all staying for Christmas, Liza with her secrets, Jenny with her standoffishness. Claire and Veronica appeared pretty normal, but Grace hardly knew them. She couldn't imagine any of them walking deliberately down from the schoolhouse to scrawl a word on her car. But then she'd seen Jenny and Claire coming from that direction just yesterday. What about Ben? After all, she was convinced he wasn't being entirely honest with her. It was Ben who walked past her car each time he came to work. She had trusted him enough to let him into the cottage and their lives. But what if her instincts about him were wrong? And there was Emma's son, who looked ghoulish and might think it a good joke, scaring the new neighbour. Or Feathery Jack, who lived in a world of screeching owls and dead mice. He'd seemed cordial enough, but perhaps he didn't want a newcomer in the village. "You've just named the whole of Roseby," she told herself. "Who have you left out? Meredith's dog? Timmy the ghost?" She laughed, but it felt uncomfortably close to hysteria. Perhaps Annabelle and James were right. Perhaps this place was getting to her more than she realized. Chapter 29. Grace got back to the cottage a few hours later, as dusk began to fall. She opened the door with Millie half asleep in her arms and was about to call hello, but stopped as she heard Annabelle talking. She didn't mean to eavesdrop, but she couldn't help but hear what Annabelle was saying. "Don't worry, I'll make the deadline. I got some good stuff today, so I'll write it up quickly." There was a pause then. "Really? Oh, that's so exciting. I can't believe I'll miss it. I don't think we're doing anything for New Year's. Grace has barely mentioned it. I'm stuck here in this crappy cottage, freezing my arse off. My sister seems obsessed with the place and it's beginning to freak me out." Grace pushed open the living room door with a bang and saw Annabelle's shock turn to dismay.
Zoe, I'll have to call you back,
she said, and hung up. She came across.
Look, Grace, I'm sorry. I didn't mean...
No one is forcing you to stay, Grace told her grimly. Why don't you go if you hate it that much?
What is your problem, Grace? I'm not leaving you.
Annabelle, I'm 32. I don't need a sodding babysitter, thank you.
Just go. If that's how you really feel, then I'm probably better off without you.
Annabelle's temper snapped.
Oh, is that so? Fine. If I'm not needed, then I'll get my things, she said,
and barged past Grace, running up the stairs. Grace set Millie in her high chair and went to the cupboard, ignoring her unsteady fingers as she collected a jar of food. She was watching Millie eat when she heard her sister clomping down the stairs, her case bumping behind her. Annabelle's flustered face appeared in the doorway.
You're right, Grace. We need a break from each other. Otherwise, you're going to drive me crazy as well as yourself.
As Annabelle headed for the front door, Grace's anger disappeared, leaving fear in its stead. I'm sorry, Annabelle, she said.
It's just... You didn't write the word leave on my car, did you? As a joke? What are you talking about?
Annabelle stopped and faced her. Grace saw her sister's alarmed expression and faltered. What was the point in explaining? Annabelle would only tell her that it was another reason to get away from this place. It's nothing, she said. Annabelle shook her head, flung open the door, and began dragging her case down the path. Grace tried to tell herself that this was a good thing. It was time to stand on her own two feet, and with everyone gone, she could get on. But when she heard Annabelle start her engine, she ran out of the cottage towards the garden gate. The little red car had already zoomed off down the road, and Grace used all her willpower to keep herself from running after it and screaming for it to stop. Instead, she stood motionless, holding her breath until the noise of the engine had completely faded away. They were alone. She looked up at the cottage. It stared back at her obliquely, its windows blank eyes. She steeled herself, straightening her posture, and headed inside. She was staying here for one fundamental reason. Adam. She wouldn't lose sight of that. Once the cottage was empty, she would reassess. If her efforts had revealed nothing, then she would accept the inevitable hollow goodbye. In fact, nowadays she often found herself hoping for its benign release, rather than anything else. For it was the gathering phantoms of other possibilities that kept on waking her at night to an icy darkness, sweating and shaking, repeatedly grasping for the light. Chapter 30. Grace lay awake for much of the night, wishing Annabelle had come back, while telling herself over and over that she was doing the right thing by staying. She flinched at every strange noise she didn't recognize, however slight. Thankfully, the clock ticked steadily, but there was definitely some scratching going on in the wardrobe. It sounded like a mouse, but there was no way she would be investigating. Finally, she dozed until the day broke and Millie woke up. She was tremendously tired that morning. She felt like the air was treacly, slowing her down, everything taking twice as long as it usually did. She was still in her pajamas when Ben knocked on the door. She answered it, resigned to him seeing her like this, and straight away his face conveyed his concern.
Grace, what's happened?
Nothing. It's just that everyone's gone and it all seems a bit daunting.
You look exhausted.
He came in and set his toolbox down near where Millie was playing. Millie crawled over and tried to open it. Ben kneeled down next to her.
Not sure you're ready to help me out yet. But what have you been doing here, Millie?
He indicated the blocks spread out over the floor.
Shall we give your mum a hand and put these away?
Grace sat down on the sofa and watched the two of them together. When Millie began to take blocks back out of the bag, Ben built her a tower, and she gleefully knocked it down. Grace leaned back, and her head began to drift. The next thing she knew, she was waking up. Bewildered, a surge of panic rushed over her as she opened her eyes. In front of her, Millie was strapped into her high chair with Ben feeding her a sandwich. Ben registered her movement and looked across, seeing her alarm.
"It's okay, Grace. You fell asleep," he said. "You've been out for the count. I decided I'd leave you to it, though, to be honest, I don't think an elephant stampede through the living room would have woken you."
Relief flooded over her. She felt momentarily weepy, but pulled herself together as she sat up. Millie held up her sandwich to show Grace. "Thank you so much," she said to Ben. "It's a rare treat to have a morning nap."
"I can imagine," Ben replied. "And you're welcome. Anytime."
"Don't say that unless you mean it," Grace laughed. "I might take you up on it."
"I do mean it, Grace."
He held her gaze. Grace felt compelled to break the protracted silence that followed. "I had a falling out with Annabelle," she confided, finding herself glad to talk to someone. "And she left while she was angry with me. We don't usually fight, not seriously."
"Don't worry,"
Ben reassured her.
"My sisters argue all the time, always have. There's invariably some sort of upset going on in my family. Of course, I've been on the outside for a long time now, but from what I can gather, it still goes on. Everyone is so stubborn. They insist on blaming each other for their problems, so one drama gets replaced by another."
"I gather you haven't seen your mum yet," Grace asked gently. Ben grimaced.
"Unless she meets me halfway, nothing will ever change."
"Have you tried to talk to her? Or does she just know that you're here?"
"Claire's been acting as a go-between so far," he admitted.
"Perhaps you should cut Claire out and try speaking to her yourself," Grace suggested as she got up from the sofa.
"You don't know my mother."
"Actually, I do, a little bit. And she's pretty formidable. But what choice does she have if you confront her? She has to listen, surely. And there must be a part of her that is longing to see you."
"Perhaps."
Ben didn't look convinced, but he sat there in silence for a while, thinking.
"Maybe I'm still not sure whether I want to see her."
Grace waited for him to continue, but he added nothing further. She collected some yogurt from the fridge and offered Millie a few spoonfuls before she said, "Ben, can I ask you a favor?"
"Of course."
"I feel a bit of a wimp saying this, but catching mice is not my forte. Can you set a trap for me upstairs and then check it tomorrow? One of those humane ones." Ben smiled at her.
"I think I can manage that. Although, do you have the trap already?"
She shook her head.
"Then I don't know where you'll find one around here. Not many care about seeing the mice live. But I'll tell you what, I'll try to make something if you like."
He contemplated the idea for a moment.
"I'll need a plastic box or ball, at least 5 centimeters high. Then something like a nail file or a cocktail stick."
An hour later, the homemade trap was ready to go. Grace had run about finding materials, then looked on in admiration as Ben had constructed it. He lifted it carefully, and they headed upstairs to her bedroom. Grace set Millie on the bed. "I think it's somewhere in here," she said, opening the door of the built-in wardrobe. Ben put down the trap and knelt beside it.
"I'll just have a peek and see if I can spot where the little nuisance has been," he told her.
He began checking the floor, and Grace watched him while she and Millie sat on the bed. He lifted up a piece of carpet. Then he paused.
You might want to come and look at this,"
If it's a dead mouse, then I'd really rather not, she told him, staying put.
Well, there's no mouse, but he's left his mark,
Ben said, and he lifted up a bundle of chewed banknotes. Where the hell did that come from? Grace asked, beginning to understand what it was that she was looking at.
There's a loose floorboard under here, with a space beneath it.
Oh my God. That's got to be the money Adam took out of the bank, the day before he disappeared. He told me he was going to get some cash to keep at the cottage, but he never told me where he was planning on putting it. And I couldn't find it. It was one of the reasons the police thought he'd run away.
Ben sat back with his arms wrapped around his knees, studying her carefully.
But you don't think he did run away now, do you, Grace?
Chapter 31. After Ben had gone, Grace didn't even bother contacting the police, knowing Ken Barton was away. Instead, she called Niall again.
It's Grace Lockwood, she said in a rush as he answered. I found the £1,000 that Adam took out of the bank. It was hidden under a floorboard. I came across it this afternoon while I was looking for a mouse. He must have put it there for safekeeping, and he just didn't get a chance to tell me.
She hesitated, then went on. It seems highly unlikely that Adam would suddenly decide to leave without any money on him. There's got to be more to it.
So how do I get the police interested?
She waited for his answer, her heart thumping hard.
Look, you really need to have a word with someone at the station. I'm not back there until Monday, but if you haven't gotten anywhere by then, come down while I'm on duty, and I'll make sure you get some attention.
Grace knew he was trying to help, but the lack of urgency in Niall's tone was dispiriting. For the next few days, it looked like all she could do was sit on her hands. Niall sensed her disappointment.
I know the waiting's hard, but although you've made some discoveries, I'm not sure there's much that'll give us any new leads.
He thought for a moment.
Look, I might be in Octon later today. I'll see if I can do a bit of digging about Johnny Templeton.
Thank you. His sister's name is Josephine, if that helps. I don't know her married name, but I think she still lives in Octon.
All right, then, Niall said. I'll be in touch if I find anything.
Grace hung up and went over to Millie, picking her up.
So what shall we do now? She asked her daughter.
In reply, Millie screeched and pushed hard against her, struggling until Grace put her down. Grace sat and watched as Millie crawled over to a pile of books, picked them up one by one, and riffled briefly through the pages before flinging them aside. Her daughter seemed increasingly unsettled of late. Grace wished Millie could tell her what she had seen on the day Adam had disappeared. Her little mind might hold all the answers, Grace thought. If only she could access them. She leaned deeper into the chair cushions, thinking. Adam couldn't have met with an accident, or Millie would have been found with him. So either he'd run away and chosen to leave his baby behind, or he had been an unsuspecting victim of some sort. Everyone seemed to think that the first option was more likely. But what if something sinister had happened? In that case, Millie had been left on the doorstep by someone else, which meant they had known where Grace and Adam lived, and they were probably aware that Grace was back here now. Her thoughts flashed back to the word leave, its spectral appearance on her car windshield. Her throat constricted, and her lungs began to heave, struggling to draw in oxygen. She looked at her car keys on the table, then towards Millie. Why wasn't she going? She could make the decision right now and it would all be over. It will never be over while you have so many questions, she reminded herself. She just had to keep listening to the calm, rational part of herself and ignore the shrieking voice in her head, issuing a stream of dire warnings. After all, she had been living here for a month
and nothing much had actually happened. Only that word written on her car windshield, which might have been a twisted prank. The rest of it could be put down to chance, or paranoia. Meanwhile, she was getting closer to uncovering some answers. She knew it. She could at least stay until Monday and go to the station. In the meantime, she would pack up the rest of the cottage, organize it so she was ready to leave whenever she wanted to. She felt better after running things through in her mind. When Millie went for her lunchtime nap, Grace made herself a sandwich and brought the rest of the papers down from her bedroom to read at the small dining table. There were more letters in Rachel's handwriting, and she leafed through them. They looked to be newsy. No mention of Johnny, though some lovely references to Adam as a baby, which made her nostalgic for Millie's early days, back in London. She bundled all of them together. She would take them with her as keepsakes for Millie. As she picked up the final envelope, she found a stack of notes underneath, in handwriting she hadn't seen before. They were written on identical sheets of white notepad paper, folded in half. She picked up the first one.
"If you go, I will die."
Grace was stunned. Quickly, she found the next one.
"I can't bear the thought of being apart from you. Please don't go. We can work this out, whatever our parents say. I love you, Johnny."
Grace put it down and picked up another.
"I love you."
Then another.
"Don't leave me."
And the last one.
"Don't make me hate you forever."
Grace frowned. In the accounts she had heard so far, it was always Johnny who had abandoned Rachel. But these notes told a totally different story, one with an unsettling undertone. She wished now that she hadn't jumbled up the contents in the boxes from the cellar by tipping them onto her bed together. If she'd gone through them one at a time, she would have known exactly which box these had come from and what else had been in there. She was curious as to whether Adam knew about these notes. Surely if he'd read them, he would reconsider what he knew of his father and want to find him in order to learn the full story. She fervently hoped Niall could uncover more information about Johnny. She was convinced that he was somehow important. She couldn't settle to looking through the more mundane papers after this. Instead, she went upstairs and grabbed the dog-eared copy of Rebecca, then lay down on the bed and tried to immerse herself in it. Soon she was engrossed, and she was just reaching the end of a chapter when Millie woke and began to call out to her. Maxim de Winter had faced his wife with the truth, and as Grace got up and hurried to her daughter, his final question still rang in her ears. "Will you look into my eyes and tell me that you love me now?" Chapter 32. Grace had expected to spend the whole of New Year's Eve with only Millie for company, but in the afternoon, Emma came around with a request.
"My sister's having a charity sale at church tomorrow, and she's tearing her hair out trying to get enough donations. All the money goes to the homeless. You don't have anything she can sell, do you?"
"Are you kidding?" Grace replied, stepping back so Emma could see the boxes stacked up in the hallway behind her. It was a valuable opportunity to hasten the clearance, and Grace's spirits rallied as they filled Emma's car with as much as it could hold. Emma looked longingly at what was left behind.
"It's such a shame to leave it, but we're staying over in Octon tonight for New Year's, and I'm helping her set up the sale first thing. I should have thought about this earlier."
Her shoulders slumped regretfully. "Well, I could bring these to Octon for you, if you like," Grace offered.
"Oh, don't you worry," Emma said hastily. "There's no need to go to any bother."
But Grace was thinking of Johnny. She had a burgeoning desire to see the farm at Gildale for herself, and Octon was only a few miles farther. "I'd be happy to," she insisted. "Just give me directions." Emma's face brightened.
"Well, that's ever so kind of you. My sister will be thrilled.
If you've got a paper and pen handy, I'll draw you a map.
As they finished and Grace closed the door, she surveyed the half-empty hallway. This had been a stroke of luck for her as well as for Emma's sister. Tomorrow this area would be clear again. It was amazing how the knowledge made her mind feel so much lighter. As she walked into the living room and looked around, she felt a fresh impetus to clear out as much as she could today. Most of the contents of the china cabinet could go to tomorrow's sale, not to mention the extra table linen. She grabbed a few empty boxes from the hall and began to pull things out of drawers and pack them up. It was satisfying work, and she was stacking yet another full box in the hallway when she heard someone crunching down the garden path. She opened the door to see Claire standing there.
"Ben told me that your guests have gone, so I decided to pop round and see how you are."
Grace was touched by Claire's thoughtfulness. "Come in. Would you like a hot drink?"
"A tea would be great, thanks."
They went through to the living room. Claire took a seat and began talking to Millie while Grace boiled the kettle. When their mugs were on the table, Claire asked,
"So, what are you doing for New Year's tonight?"
"Not a lot," Grace admitted. She had been half hoping that Ben would come and find her to suggest they spent it together. Since he hadn't, there weren't many other options.
"Would you like to come up to the schoolhouse? All my sisters will be there. We usually have a bit of a get-together. It isn't right to see it in alone."
Grace wasn't keen to spend an evening outnumbered by Meredith and her family. However, she realized that it might give her the opportunity to speak to Liza again and persuade her to talk to the police. Before she could reply, Claire leaned forward.
"Actually, I have to confess. I'm hoping that Ben might come too, if he knows you'll be there."
Grace coughed as a large gulp of hot tea hit her throat unexpectedly fast.
"What makes you say that?"
"Well, he seems to think a lot of you, and I'm willing to try anything, to be honest. I am so sick of him skulking up there in that house, and Mum sitting in a castle, and never the twain shall meet. It's ridiculous. They're as bad as each other. If I'd known how this was going to pan out, I wouldn't have suggested he came back."
Grace put down her mug. "I don't know much about it. He's only said that he had a big falling out with your parents, and they've been estranged for years."
"Well, I bet he didn't mention how much grief he caused Mum and Dad when he was younger. He was quite the rebel for a while. Perhaps he was sick of being stuck out here with a load of teenage girls. It can't have been easy. He crashed Dad's car into the pub one night after he'd had too much to drink, lost control and it skidded right down the hill."
"So is that why he's still barred?" Grace asked. "I saw him getting thrown out." Claire smiled.
"Len and Joyce think Yant's a bad egg, Alice a bad egg, as do most people round here. They probably don't realise how much time has passed. Once Ben got his reputation, it was always going to be difficult for him to shake it off. Moving away was probably his only option. But then he set our house on fire."
"What?"
"Oh, he didn't mean to. He fell asleep in our old living room and left a candle burning. Woke up to find the room ablaze. Mum and Dad were out at the time, but all us girls were home. Ben came flying up the stairs to warn us, but we couldn't get down past the fire. So we ended up climbing out of Veronica's window and over the schoolhouse roof. It took the fire engine nearly an hour to get here, and half the house had burned down by the time they got it under control. We were lucky not to lose everything. But Mum and Dad never really forgave him. They pretty much kicked him out. Or should I say, they made his life hell from then on until he'd had enough."
Grace pictured the elegant room at the back of the house. "So the huge dining room with the picture window is part of the refurbishment?"
"Yes."
"And how did you keep in touch with Ben after he left?"
"He would write to us. Mum and Dad never mentioned him, but we would tell him bits and pieces about what he was doing. The rift appeared to come from both sides, though I thought Mum might back down now Dad has gone. At least it's jolted Ben into making an effort, even if it's too late with Dad. But I don't know why he's come all this way and now seems stuck at the last hurdle. even if Mum should be meeting him halfway. Perhaps he's just too proud to beg. Well, I hope they can sort it out. Claire finished her tea and stood up. So will you come tonight? Grace hedged. It's a really kind offer, but it's difficult with Millie. She can sleep in the living room if you like. It's right next door to the dining room, and we have a baby monitor we can put in there as well. That's what we did when Veronica's boys were babies. Grace couldn't think of another reason not to go, and so found herself reluctantly acquiescing. Okay, I'll come. Thanks.
Great.
Claire began to pull on her gloves.
Come around 8.
They walked to the door. Good luck with Ben, Grace said as she showed Claire out.
Thanks.
Claire paused.
He's fond of you, you and Millie. You're doing him good. When he talks about you, he smiles, and he makes a change. It's almost like we have the old Ben back.
And she walked down the path towards the garden gate without waiting for a reply. Chapter 33. Grace stood in front of the schoolhouse, her hands gripping Millie's stroller, summoning up the courage to go in. Tonight, thoughts of Adam set off squalls of pain behind her shoulder blades and produced a hot ache in her stomach. 2 years ago, they had been standing in Times Square together after Adam whisked her away to New York as a surprise. They had only been married a few months and were thinking about trying for a baby sometime in the next year, unaware that Millie would be conceived ahead of schedule a month later. As they had held one another close, wrapped within a crowd of thousands all rejoicing, life was crammed with excitement and opportunity. Last year, she had been in her parents' villa. Her mum had given her 2 sleeping pills, and she had gone to bed at 10. She peered up at the forbidding house, the only Christmas decoration a prickly wreath of holly on the door. However, despite her hesitation, she had to admit to herself that spending the evening with Meredith's family was more appealing than sitting in her musty old cottage on her own, watching TV. And maybe Ben would be there too. Claire greeted her at the door. Did you speak to Ben? Grace asked, as she manoeuvred Millie's stroller inside.
Yes, he didn't agree to show up, but he heard me out and said he'd think about it.
Claire confided in a whisper.
I reminded him that there's never going to be a perfect time for this. I've told Mummy might be coming. She grimaced and has avoided me since, so I've no idea what she makes of it, but that's Mum for you.
All my sisters have seen him already, so there won't be any big reunions. It's just him and Mum finally being in the same room together. Keep your fingers crossed for us all, won't you? As she led Grace inside, 2 small boys ran past, the first one trailing a balloon, while the smaller one tried gleefully to catch it.
Careful, Veronica said, appearing in a doorway and glaring at her children. Sorry, guys. They've had too much lemonade today. We're in for a heap of trouble tonight, I think.
Millie's asleep, Grace said, indicating the stroller, its hood down.
Pop her in here, then.
Veronica opened the door to the living room.
The eating's on, so it's nice and warm, and I've set the monitor up for you.
Grace peeped inside. The room was softly lit by a small lamp next to the sofa, and she remembered Annabelle sitting there, trying to interview Meredith. She looked at the tall witching post next to the fireplace and thought sadly of her sister. How she wished Annabelle were here tonight, cracking jokes and being sarcastic. Grace wheeled Millie's stroller over to one corner, checked her daughter was still asleep, then came out and gently closed the door. The dining room door was ajar, light blazing through the gap, and she followed Claire to join the party. It was the first time she had seen all of Meredith's daughters together. Veronica was next to Liza on one of the sofas, talking animatedly while pressing her hand against Liza's protruding belly. Jenny sat opposite, her eyes on her sister's. The husbands were standing by the picture window, its curtains drawn. Dan wore a thick leather jacket,
in contrast to Steve's polo shirt and smart trousers. They looked unlikely friends, and as Grace watched, Dan said something with a chuckle that made Steve look uneasy. In the corner, three young boys were attempting to play Twister. Last of all, Grace spotted Feathery Jack, seated at the table on his own, with a sherry glass in his hand. Claire had gone to find her mother, and Grace looked around wondering who she should talk to. She was already beginning to regret coming, feeling like the spectre in the room that nobody had noticed.
Grace?
She turned to see Meredith, her face stiff with that familiar veneer of politeness.
Hello, Meredith. Thank you for inviting me.
She handed over a bottle of wine.
You're welcome.
Meredith took the gift and forced her smile a little wider. There's food on the side table. Please, help yourself. Grace went obediently across to the buffet. As she picked up a plate, she surreptitiously looked back to see Meredith surveying the room. Slowly, her children stopped talking.
Well, come and eat,
Meredith said to them, and they began to get up.
I'll turn 69 this year,
a voice piped up behind Grace. She turned to find Feathery Jack, hunched in a chair. His eyes were wide, as though he couldn't quite believe his own words. Grace wasn't sure what she should say in reply. He looked far older. Her parents were already in their 60s, but retirement was rejuvenating them. They could easily be mistaken for Jack's children.
Next year, Jack, you'll be 69 next year. The new year hasn't come yet,
Claire added, as she reappeared next to Grace. She didn't get a response, nor did she seem to expect one.
As last of the old school,
Jack added gruffly.
Rest gone to meet their maker.
Grace didn't know what to say to that. Instead, she began to gather food on her plate, then sat down at the large dining table. The others slowly joined her, and Steve took a seat opposite.
So, how are you finding living on the moors, Grace?
I like it, Grace replied, but I've got a lot to do. I wish I had more time to explore the area. Dan cut in.
No word from that husband of yours, then?
All other conversations stopped.
Dan, I'll leave her be.
Claire sounded irritated.
I was only asking.
Dan was in the police force for a while, Liza explained. He had friends working on the investigation.
Grace could feel her face burning with embarrassment as she met Liza's eyes. The plea in them was clear, and Grace remembered her words as they had talked by the lake.
I'm begging you not to get me involved.
Dan glared at his wife.
That's right, Liza, and it's the strangest case of a missing person that I've ever heard of.
That's as may be, but I'm sure Grace doesn't want to talk to us about it,
Meredith said sternly. Dan scowled and lowered his gaze. It seemed Meredith was able to silence her son-in-law easily, even though he was ready to pick a fight with his wife. Grace glanced gratefully at Meredith, but she was concentrating on her meal. As Grace picked up her knife and fork again, she hoped the conversation was over. But the next voice was female, and obviously directed at her.
Don't you feel scared, living out here alone with your baby? It's pretty isolated. You must be lonely.
Grace looked up to see Jenny observing her curiously. Sometimes, she admitted.
But we're adjusting. I don't think I could live back here now,
Veronica remarked.
No offence,
she said as Meredith raised her head.
I've just gotten too used to having a supermarket on hand 24/7. I don't know how you did it, Mum. I'm always running in there for something or other.
You just need a better routine,
Meredith said.
You have it too easy nowadays. It makes you lazy.
No, it doesn't,
Veronica cried.
Disorganized, maybe. Lazy, no.
Meredith smiled thinly and began to help herself to more potato salad.
How old is your daughter, Grace?
Jenny asked.
Millie is 15 months. Grace couldn't help smiling as Millie's petite little face came into her mind. She's developing a strong will of her own already, though she hasn't started walking yet. She looked across at Liza. How long till your baby arrives?
5 weeks,
Liza replied.
I can't believe it.
Changes your life, that's for sure. Grace tried to catch Veronica's eye for backup, and Veronica smiled, but didn't seem willing to comment. Grace fell silent again, feeling as though she had hit on an awkward subject. She was relieved that everyone's attention moved next to Claire, who was roundly berated for planning yet another trip abroad, with no sense of, in Dan's words, long-term responsibility. Grace had always been a little envious of big families, but as she listened, she realized that they could be quite claustrophobic too, particularly if everyone decided to gang up on you and tell you how to live your life. Perhaps that's what had happened to Ben. She looked at the mantelpiece clock. It was after 9, and there was no sign of him. It didn't seem as though he were coming, which meant that she had a long night ahead of her with the rest of his family. She had just finished eating when the conversation swung her way again.
So, Grace, how are you getting on with the cottage?
It was Steve, Veronica's husband, who had spoken. Slowly, Grace admitted. But hopefully things will speed up a bit, now that all the festivities are out of the way.
Meredith told me about her suggestion,
he continued, and Grace recalled Meredith saying that he was a lawyer. She looked over to see that Meredith had her head tilted to one side as she listened, like a bird suddenly aware of an interesting morsel.
When people go missing, the spouse can get tied into their property for years, even if it is in joint names,
Steve continued. Grace tried to keep her face fixed as she said, Yes, I'm aware of that. Her voice was hostile, and she avoided everyone's gaze.
Meredith's idea might be advantageous for both of you,
Steve persisted.
And I'd be happy to find out what can be done legally. If you rent it to someone you know, you might avoid a few problems, particularly if Adam comes back and isn't happy with the arrangement.
That's unlikely to happen now,
Dan added as he ate, waving his fork in the air.
Sorry, Grace, but you don't often find a missing person after all this time.
Grace was seething. How dare they casually discuss her decisions, her life and her husband over dinner like this? She was on the verge of losing her temper when the conversation moved on, as though nothing had happened. Veronica started to reprimand one of their children for running around with their food. Jenny got up and began collecting plates. Grace met Claire's eyes and saw her sympathy. Meredith was scrutinizing her too, but as soon as Grace noticed, the older woman got to her feet and busied herself helping Jenny with the dishes. People began to leave the table, and Liza hurried from the room.
I'm going to check on Millie,
Grace announced to no one in particular, and followed. At least if she could press Liza to talk to the police, this night wouldn't be a total waste of time. However, by the time she reached the hallway, Liza was nowhere to be seen. Frustrated, Grace headed instead to the living room and peeked under the stroller hood, reassured by the sight of Millie's peaceful face. She sat down and was considering whether to rejoin the party or sneak back to the cottage when she realized she could hear talking. It was coming from behind her, beyond a window that looked out over the front of the house. She wanted to move, but the curtains were open, and if she got up, she would probably be seen in the lamplight. So she sat there, uncomfortably, unable to avoid hearing what was being said.
Liza, listen to me,
came a male voice.
You can't stay with him. He's an idiot.
What choice have I got? I'm not asking for anything from you, so leave me alone. I can't do this anymore.
We're not doing anything. I'm just talking to you.
You know exactly what I mean. It should never have happened in the first place. If anyone finds out, if Veronica...
They won't.
They would suspect right this second if they opened the door. I have to get back.
Liza, wait.
But then there was the sound of the front door opening and shutting, and footsteps hurrying along the corridor. Grace sat there stunned. It was unbelievable. This family became increasingly complicated the more she knew of them. Surely Veronica would have some idea of what was going on right under her nose. She couldn't live with someone and not know. Then she realized where her thoughts would lead and cut them dead. There had been no sound since she heard the front door, and her anger had faded to resignation. There was little point in sitting here. She would go back to the party and at least try to see in the new year. She had another peep at Millie, who was still soundly asleep, then headed back out. She was in the corridor, about to re-enter the dining room, when the front door opened. Steve looked at her in astonishment, but as he saw the look on her face, his eyes turned guilt-ridden. Grace could only hope that she did a passable job of feigning disinterest before she turned away. A few people asked after Millie when she returned. They had all moved across to the comfier seating, and as the wine flowed, most of the family gradually forgot Grace was there. At one point, her phone beeped in her pocket and, collecting it, she saw she had a text from James.
"Looks like our friendship is finished."
She would have been disturbed by it if she didn't know him so well. He would have had too much to drink for the New Year's countdown. "Don't be daft," she quickly replied. But after that, she heard nothing more. When the clock read 11:15, Claire leaned over and said sadly,
"I can't believe Ben isn't going to come."
Claire had seemed so hopeful that this evening might be a step forward for them all, and Grace felt sorry for her. "I'm sure he has his reasons."
"Yes, he's as stubborn as Mum," Claire muttered.
As the year met its final hour, the conversation began to turn maudlin. Veronica had eventually got her boys off to bed, and appeared to be determined to make up for the drinking time she'd missed. She was lying on the couch, with her head propped against Steve's thigh, when she said,
"I can't believe this is the first New Year's without Dad."
"I know,"
Claire agreed.
"He did love a good knees up."
"He loved the idea of a party,"
Liza said with a smile.
"But let's face it, often by this time he'd be exactly like Jack."
They all looked across. Feathery Jack was slumped in an armchair, his head lolling forward over his chest, as his body rose and fell rhythmically.
"Not on New Year's," Meredith said. "That was different."
Grace turned with the others towards Meredith, who had hovered between the kitchen and the dining room all night. She had kept on the outskirts of the conversation, and yet the girls hadn't noticed. They treated this place as though it belonged to them, and their mother like she was part of the furniture. But Grace had the feeling that Meredith was the glue that held them all invisibly together. Grace felt a rush of sympathy as the older woman stooped to collect some empty glasses. She got up and went across, determined to make an effort.
"Can I help you with anything?"
Meredith abruptly straightened. It was as though she had been lost in her own world, and Grace was interrupting her. Lamplight bounced off her eyes and made them appear moist. But perhaps it was just a trick of light. After she moved, all Grace could see on Meredith's face was the emotionless expression she was used to.
"I'm fine, Grace," she said. "But thank you for asking."
"Mom? Grace?"
came Veronica's voice from across the room.
"Steve's going to do first footing. No reason why we can't keep up Dad's tradition.